You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Show brought to you by Last Word on Sports. I'm Molly Smith, and joining me as always is Rob Mitchell. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm good, Mo. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Plenty to talk about Six Nations wise this week after the launch last Wednesday down at the Hurlingham Club in Southwest London. Plenty of interviews and quotes and things that have come out of that launch, and I was fortunate enough to be there on behalf of Last Word on Sports, and we'll come on to a few of the interviews from the captains and coaches a little bit later on. But Rob, as we go into this first weekend of the 2016 Six Nations, predominantly, what are we looking for? We've got some great fixtures coming up in both the men's and the women's games, and there's going to be a lot of high-octane action, isn't there?
Yeah, I think all eyes, I think, go straight to the Calcutta Cup match. Obviously, England changed their managers post-World Cup. A lot of eyes on Eddie Jones, but not to do a disservice to Scotland, I think a lot of eyes are on them to see how they react following what was a good World Cup for them, and they were literally minutes from the semi-finals. So I think there's a lot of narrative going on in that game for both sides, and a lot of eyes looking towards that game to see how those pan out.
Yeah, there is a lot of talk about the Calcutta Cup, a great way to kick off for both of these sides, Scotland versus England. It's 10-5 kickoff at Murrayfield this coming Saturday, so it's going to be a great fixture. We'll see how the Murrayfield pitch handles all the scrums that are expected to happen. Quite evenly balanced scrum-wise. There's a lot of weight there, isn't there, in them forward packs?
Yeah, I think the set piece is going to be key here. Obviously, England have got a lot of speed in their backs, but Scotland are no slouches. I think whichever side can get the better set platform from their set piece, whether it be the scrums or the lineouts, is going to be on the front foot in this game, and like any game really. And that will be the key to this game, I think, is the breakdown and the set piece.
Yeah, looking back to last year's campaign, Scotland, 79% of their scrums were successful. England, 89% of those. Like we say, after Scotland's campaign in the World Cup, though, they've improved a hell of a lot, haven't they, under Vern Cotter?
Yeah, they're obviously on an upward trend. We sort of thought they might be a bit better than they were last Six Nations. They didn't quite achieve what they should. They were very unlucky in a couple of the matches, and it was something they've worked on, and they came out of the World Cup firing. They didn't fire on all cylinders in the group stages, but they did what they needed to do to get through. Had a very good game against the Australians, and as we said, were minutes away from getting through, and that last minute penalty just sort of robbed them of that chance to appear in the semi-final. They're going to be looking to take that form and carry it on into this Six Nations. Obviously, England are going to be looking for their fresh start, and they're going to be doing their best to stand in the way of that.
Yeah, let's talk about England's fresh start. You mentioned new coach Eddie Jones there, as well as the new coaching format. He relieved, shall we say, Graham Rowntree, Mike Catt, and Andy Farrell of their duties in the coaching lineup down at Pennyhill Park. So there's a new head coach, new coaching setup as well. There's also a new captain in the form of Dylan Hartley. Love him or hate him, and it's a very controversial decision. The amount of pressure on his shoulders is just going to be, terrific, isn't it, this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to do one of two things, I think, this weekend. He's either going to go out there and prove all the doubters wrong, have a great game, manage to stay on the pitch, or he's going to do something really stupid, get Sinbin and cost England the game.
Well, if we look back at Hartley's history,
it's one of this. There's no in between, is there? It's one or the other.
It's one or the other. You know, there's a lot of people saying he's earned his place in the squad, and you know, rightly so as captain. He's a bit hard nosed. So in relation to Eddie Jones, neither of them give away too much. They've been, you know, some people label them as arrogant or dismissive, but you know, perhaps that's the approach they're taking, keeping the cards very close to their chest. If we look back on Dylan Hartley's history as captain with both Northampton Saints and England, this is what he said to me last week when I asked him about, firstly, what I asked him about the difference between, you know, being a captain for club and country, and whether actually when Eddie Jones gave him that call, whether he doubted himself at all.
Oh, I'm confident. I'm experienced with my club. I've played in big games there, and I've done the role for 6 years. I'm fine with the role. I've got good people around me. I've got good coaches, good senior players. I've got good young fellas bringing energy. So it's just exciting for me.
So to me, I'm not sure about you, Rob. To me, he almost sort of isn't aware that there's a difference between club and country level. I got the feeling from him that because he's been club captain for Northampton Saints for quite a few years on and off in between his suspensions, he's got that experience as a leader. It's almost like he can, of course he can use that experience with country as well, but it's almost like he's not aware that there's a big step up and a hell of a lot more pressure.
Yeah, I think if he thinks there's going to be no pressure, he's slightly deluding himself. I think Eddie Jones has gone in general for a clean slate with everybody. You look at the inclusion of players who were previously frozen out under Stuart Lancaster for discipline problems, such as Manu Tuilagi, who has been included pending fitness. So we will see him at some point when he gets fully fit and has had enough game time for Leicester for Eddie Jones to consider him. But did you really want to nail your colours to your captain as a man that is probably England's biggest disciplinary liability? That's the concern I have. I don't have a concern with him being called up and being given the same clean slate as players like Tuilagi. I would not have picked him as captain. I would have gone for one of the younger lads, someone who was a fresh take on it, someone like Josh Beaumont or Atoje. I think both of them were strong captaincy candidates. I know people say they're too young, but you look at Carling, when he was very young, when he became England captain, got us to a final, a semi-final of the World Cup, a few Grand Slams. It isn't the leadership qualities are there, doesn't matter what your age is. I'm not sure Hartley's got the right leadership qualities. He's very obviously very committed to the cause. He will give 120%, but sometimes with him that comes out in the form of something a bit stupid.
Yeah, you did mention a couple of the younger lads there, and when Eddie Jones was questioned about it last week, he said it's going to be very tough conditions at Murrayfield. You know, the weather isn't predicted to be very nice. You know, being in front of 60,000 Scottish fans, it's going to be tough conditions, and it's going to be a tough side to face, and he's going to have to put his toughest and you know, perhaps most experienced side out. So obviously we won't see too many debuts or of the younger guys in this Scotland match for the Calcutta Cup. Going back to Dylan Hartley, he has captained England once before, 2012 in the South Africa Test during the summer. I think it was the third test. Chris Robshaw had done something to his thumb. Dylan Hartley was put in as captain, and lo and behold, got sin-binned. So 10 minutes without a leader on the pitch, and I think England might have lost that game. And not completely blaming that on Dylan Hartley not being on the pitch for a whole 10 minutes, but you know, it's bound to have some sort of influence, isn't it, Bob?
Losing any player for 10 minutes is a bad thing. It's not what you want to see. You normally see points against you in that. Obviously, there's occasions where teams can hold out, but it against tough teams like Scotland at Murrayfield, it could mean the difference between winning and losing. And you want your captain to be setting the example. You don't want him sat on the touchline adding to a year's worth of career bans.
Yeah, it's, what is it, 54 weeks so far?
Yeah,
and
counting.
I mean, and also, like you just said, like we just heard Dylan Hartley say there, you know, he says he's had experience captain with some big games with Northampton Saints. Yet one of those games was the 2013 Premiership final, whereas, you know, what did he do? Went and got himself red carded for abusing the referee with some bad language. I'm sure everybody remembers that. So, you know, he says he's had this experience captaining big sides on big occasions, yet that one of the biggest occasions of them all, and he let his side down.
Not only that, it cost him his place in the Lions squad that year. One of a highlight of any British player's career. So you have to think, if he can't keep himself disciplined for a huge game that's going to decide the way the trophy goes at the end of the season, and that knowing that if you get a red card in that game, it's going to probably cost you your place on a Lions tour, what more motivation do you need to manage to keep your head?
Yeah, it's I think all eyes are going to be on Hartley at the weekend, and you know, like we've all said, Eddie Jones is either going to be hated or he's going to be a hero for selecting Hartley at captain. And you know, it's going to go one of two ways. He's either going to lead the side, and you know, Eddie Jones is going to do anything for a win on his debut selection and debut as head coach. And of course, Hartley is in the same boat. You know, he has said this is his clean slate, and Eddie Jones has given him this chance. And even though he has been quite defensive about it, let's just let them prove themselves on the pitch, and we'll see what happens there. Quickly picking up on the back line, Scotland are very dangerous with ball in hand. We saw that during the World Cup campaign last year. But at the 2015 Six Nations, they made a huge 754 metres altogether in their total campaign, opposed to England's 467. So there's a lot to be said there. The amount of, you know, the amount of an influence that pairings can make in that back line. And, you know, for an England side that can pride itself a lot on its forward pack, and, you know, 6, 7, 8 being normally quite a steadfast position, when it comes to that back line and the back three, you know, with Johnny May being out, you know, who are you going to look to, Rob, to sort of, you know, compete with Scotland's, you know, intensity and pace?
Yeah, we've still got Mike Brown, who was England's best player at the World Cup, in my opinion. You've still got Anthony Watson, who probably wasn't far behind him in that ranking. I mean, I don't think you really have anybody that had a great World Cup in that that could really write home about. But those two are probably two of England's best players. Jack Nowell's been in the squad and in and around it for a while, so I think he'll probably come in and replace Johnny May. But I think those three can do damage if the centres can get themselves working. We're yet to see. Eddie Jones hasn't really shown his hand as to what he's going to do at inside centre yet. You have to think Jonathan Joseph, who obviously can do what he can do. We saw last spring what he was capable of. And if he can replicate his form in the Six Nations from last year, he'll be very dangerous as well. So it's all about if whoever he picks at 10 and whoever he picks at 12 can bring those guys we've just spoken about into the match, because all four of those are guys that can run a defence ragged if you give them the space to do so.
No Chris Ashton, are they going to miss Chris at all?
No, I don't think he'd have started anyway.
No, I don't. I was, and even Rocco Duguni, who he brought in as cover for Ashton, he's been sent back to Bath.
Yeah,
and he won't feature in the side. So, yeah, it's, you know, I was talking to Richard Cockerell earlier today at Leicester, and he couldn't say enough good things about Vern Cotter and what he's done with his Scotland side. You know, there's talk of Scotland being favourites to win this year, and I'm not sure whether that's, you know, a tall order or not. They got the wooden spoon last year, and yeah, they've improved an awful lot in the space of 12 months, haven't they?
They have. I think this is one of the most open Six Nations we've seen for a while. I really find it hard to call who's going to win this year. But it's going to come down to the key moments, the moments of brilliance and the moments of madness in any game that are going to decide who's going to walk away with the points at the end of a game week and then who's going to walk away with the trophy.
Yeah, I think for that Scotland-England match, speed to the breakdown is going to be very important. You know, defensively for England as well, they perhaps need to, you know, try and maintain that that discipline, especially with Hartley as captain. And under pressure, a sellout Murrayfield, I think, you know, with that many Scotland fans and, you know, it being, you know, especially Eddie Jones and Hartley's debut as you know, this captain and coach partnership, I think they, there's going to be an awful lot of pressure, isn't there?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of pressure, but I think it's not quite as much as you possibly would have been had it still been Stuart Lancaster. I think should England not be victorious this weekend, it would be a seen as, okay, Eddie Jones still has got hasn't had a chance to put his mark on the side. He's developing the what he wants to do and teaching the squad. So I think there won't quite be a huge backlash if England do lose. But I think it would be a good statement if they do could come away with a convincing win.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the earlier match in that day, France versus Italy, and it's 14:25 kickoff. So yeah, by the time that's finished, we'll have a breather before the Calcutta Cup fixture later on in the evening. But yeah, Saturday afternoon. I think for France particularly, we always say it depends what French side turns up. These guys are at home, so they have got that advantage almost. So you'd expect them to have it together and you know, be a little bit more unified in what they can achieve, pretty much with this Italian side. Are we looking at an out and out win for France, or do you think Italy can, you know, prove a lot of their critics wrong and you know, resurge from the World Cup?
I think Italy have got the ability to. It's just, as you said, I think it just depends on which France turn up. If France come out all guns blazing, I can't really see Italy pulling out a win. But if France are having one of their off days, I could see Italy sneaking by. I think the Italian club sides have been very good this year. They haven't won as many games I think they'd like, but they're competing a lot more than they did over the last couple of years. They've nicked a couple of wins that people thought they wouldn't get. So I think the Italian side is there and is can take advantage if France aren't up to their best. I think that would set a very dangerous tone for France if they did lose to Italy in the first game, and would then possibly be a bit behind the eight ball and be struggling in the rest of the tournament.
Let's talk about the Italian front pack. Quite heavy in comparison to the French front pack, and actually if you're going to look at you know, perhaps their strongest side, I'd always say that their forwards are their strongest part of that 15. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, you look at their top players over the last sort of decade, players like Sergio Parisi. I mean, he just has defined it, Italian rugby. And yeah, I mean, all their top players have pretty much been in the pack, and it's where the game will be won and lost for Italy. If they can keep the game tight, they can keep it rolling balls, driving pick and goes, they will have a better chance than if they try and go expansive and play. They'll play right into the French's hands.
Yeah, Guinevere's the new French coach is. I'm assuming he's looking to bring back that French flair, you know, expansive running rugby that actually Italy might not be able to compete with. Do you think that's a key area for France, knowing that Italy aren't so strong in the back line as you know, the French possibly are? Do you think if actually France get it together, you know, they're very strong at the set piece and throw it out to their centres and their wings, do you think that's where they can really capitalise on the Italy defence?
Yeah, that's what they will really need to do if they're going to be successful. Once they get a bit of a platform, get their backs running at Italy, they can do some damage. We've seen before what they can do when they're on song and feel like doing it. And if they get ahead and they can start stringing the passes together, they will, I think, cut the defence to shreds.
I think for both of these sides, discipline rate, making as least errors as possible, trying to keep it very tight in the front pack, and especially defence wise, especially for Italy as well after the World Cup, they're just going to have to be so tight, aren't they? And try and give away as little as they can. And France, we always, like I said before, we always say it depends what French side turns up. And if they aren't on form, then they normally look like they're having rings run round them, don't they?
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see how the game develops as it goes on. I think if it's tight, the French may get a bit nervous, and that might lead to that sort of scenario. If they get on top early, the Italians could capitulate. So the first few scores are going to be key in this game.
Yes, and for this new look French side, new coach, and perhaps he's going to really get this side together, and it might be the end of us saying being unsure of which French side is going to play on the day, and perhaps a little bit more consistency, and a few more wins will perhaps put a few more critics at bay. And I think for the French, it's all about confidence, isn't it? Maintaining that, playing well and hopefully getting those wins and building on that game in, game out. That's what they can strive from, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Let's move on to the final game of this weekend in the men's Six Nations. Ireland versus Wales at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. A great place to go. And if you ever get the chance, honestly do. It's the most amazing atmosphere. And it's 3 o'clock kickoff on Sunday, 7th of February. Let's start with Ireland, the home nation. They've won it 2 years in a row now, so perhaps this is magnified pressure for them to try and get it a third win, on the trot. Paul O'Connell took over from Brian O'Driscoll. Did a very good job with that side as captain, and now Rory Best has filled his shoes. Talking to him last week, he knows the pressure of it. Do you think Rory Best is the man to get Ireland that third win in 3 years?
I think he definitely can. He's a very experienced player. He's very committed, but as opposed to his recently appointed English counterpart, treads the fine line between passionate and enthusiastic and over the top a bit better. Well, just a bit.
Perhaps that comes with a more expansive knowledge of the game, that actually, that of course they're different people, but I suppose once you've experienced a lot more, and you can perhaps tone it down a little bit and understand.
And perhaps more than two brain cells to rub together.
Well, I'm not commenting on anything. I'm not saying that. Rory seems to be one of those guys who, yes, he's passionate, but he channels it in the right direction, doesn't he?
Yeah, I've maybe been a bit harsh on Mr. Hartley there, but...
No, you go for it. Rob, of the time you're just saying what a lot of people are thinking.
Sometimes you think there's nothing going on upstairs with some of the things he does, so... Rory Best does seem to just have that bit more rugby knowledge, that sort of smarts on the game, that doesn't just see what he's doing, sees the whole impact of the game. And that's obviously great in the captain. He's obviously been a leader in the team for a while now.
Yeah.
It's something Ireland and sort of Joe Schmidt have developed over the last couple of years, with players like O'Driscoll retiring, Paul O'Connell's Lions captain fills his shoes. Rory Best is now filling those shoes, and there's a lot of pressure that comes with that, but Rory Best has been a leader in that team during that period. It's not like they're just one person leading that team, and that's what's made this Ireland side one of the best Ireland sides we've seen. They have multiple leaders on the park, and it hasn't just been a, oh my god, there's a big leadership hole. It's just the next man up. And I think it's been sort of a great way to see off two, what are, I mean, I know this word gets bandied about a bit much, but two true legends of rugby union that have retired from Ireland's team in the last couple of years, and they just they've kept going.
Definitely, and it's there's a lot to be said when you try and fill those shoes, and like we always say, Paul O'Connellan and Brian O'Driscoll, two huge figures in not only Irish rugby, but you know, the game in itself. And for Rory to have got that call up, like you say, it's a, it is a big ask, and they are big shoes to fill. You know, they're still, a lot of people will say they're still sort of reminiscing in the O'Driscoll era, but you know, like you say, there is a lot of talent coming through that Irish squad, and they seem to have a good trickle feed of getting players more and more experience. So actually, when a captain drops off, like you say, there's not a huge gap left, and you know, there is just that natural step up into fulfilling that role. And let's talk about the stats and facts of last year. When it comes to conceding penalties, Ireland are very good at the discipline there. I think they only conceded 14 penalties in their own half in the whole of last year's campaign. Wales, they conceded 36, I think it was, in their own half that were kickable penalties. So when it comes to two big nations like Ireland versus Wales, and you know, this match, it can just come down to those last few points. And for people like Dan Biggar and Ian Madigan and Sexton, they're masters of what they do, and they are so good from the boot. If they get every penalty they are, you know, that they're awarded, it could be the difference between winning and losing, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, most sides now at the international stage have got a player that can kick from pretty much anywhere in the opposition half, so you have to be really careful and really disciplined. And Ireland have showed over the last couple of years how disciplined they can be, and that's been key to their success. You've got to limit how much your opponent, how many chances you give them to score. If you give, I mean, you look at Wales, I think a lot of people thought, when, probably myself included, when Lee Halfpenny was ruled out of the World Cup squad, they're going to miss something in their goal kicking when he leaves. Dan Biggar stepped up magnificently and was just lasering those balls over the post, and will look to continue that in this Six Nations. So Ireland are going to have to be on their best. When you've got someone like Johnny Sexton on the other side, Wales are going to have to really watch their discipline in front of the sticks as well. So it, a silly offside or a silly sort of holding on penalty could really be the difference in this game. These are two sides that probably both, I think they've got a point to prove. Both probably feel they should have gone at least one step further in the World Cup. So it should be a really entertaining game, and I think it could just be a one score game either way.
Definitely, and I think if of all the matches this weekend, if it's going to be a few points in it, it's definitely going to be this one. I'm not sure about the World Cup and the statistics there, but if we look at the past 2 years that Ireland have won this, their kicking rate altogether is about 82%, which is, you know, very good in itself. But Wales, with Lee Halfpenny and Dan Biggar, they're at 90%, which is a really significant percentage when it comes to kicking. And if you think, that's both home and away and in all sorts of conditions, and we all know what the weather's like this time of year, so that has a big part to play in it. They're brilliant statistics that, you know, do a lot of credit for both Dan Biggar and Lee Halfpenny. And like we said, from the boot, that's perhaps Wales' strongest point, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they'll be looking to get a bit of running over going. They've got Jonathan Davis coming back. They'll be looking to get Jamie Roberts well involved, but they will look definitely to get the boot going and get the point and get the scoreboard ticking over. They won't let up. Then they'll be ruthless, as they have been throughout Warren Gatland's tenure as manager.
Definitely, and I think it's this is perhaps going to be an exciting repeat of the last 2 years that have been, you know, very physical, really intense, both fast and fierce in that forward pack. It's going to be very tight, and I think if I was going to put my money on it being a draw, I'd perhaps put my money on this one out of the whole of the fixtures this weekend. And for as far as the men's games go, that's it for this weekend. Obviously, the three home nations, perhaps in any other competition would be favourite, but the Six Nations is renowned for throwing wobblers in there. Rob, let's start off with the France-Italy game, first fixture of the men's Six Nations this year. Who are you going to go with as the winner?
I'm going to go with France. I think just they'll have just that little bit too much. I think they'll turn up enough to see off Italy, and it'd be a tough one, but I'm not ruling Italy out completely, but I think France will just edge this one.
Yeah, I think under a new format, under a new the new leadership of Dino Vez, I think they're going to really, and being at home as well, I think they're really going to capitalise on Italy, the injuries and perhaps the uncertainty there. So I'm going to go with France as well on that one. Scotland versus England, who do you think will come out victors in this match?
I'm going to go England.
Yeah.
I think Eddie Jones will get England firing, and I think a lot of whichever side he puts out there will have a lot to prove. They're in the start of a new campaign. There isn't a World Cup just on the corner. Eddie Jones can make a lot of changes as and when he needs to if he thinks people aren't up to the job. And I think that'll just spur England on just to win the game. I don't think it'll be a hammering. I think it'll be a close match. It'll be one or two scores. But I think England will probably just about get the edge on this one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Scotland on this one. I think after the World Cup and sort of the achievements that he had there, yes, they didn't make it to the semi-final. Whether that was an official's decision and influence on the game, or perhaps they just weren't good enough, but I think they'll be on the resurge of that World Cup and off the back of that campaign. So yeah, being at home, having their own supporters there, and whatever conditions it is, we know Murrayfield is going to be buzzing on Saturday night. So yeah, I'm going to go with Scotland on this one. And finally, Ireland versus Wales on Sunday.
I'm going to go with Ireland. I think the home advantage will just about see Ireland through. I think this one really could be just a one-score game, and it could take either a moment of brilliance from somebody to break the lines, or just a moment of madness in a penalty in front of the sticks.
I think I'm going to go with Ireland as well. I would have liked to have said Wales, just so we had a bit of diversity on the programme. But no, I think I'm going to stick with my guns. I think Ireland have got this one. I think it'll be nice to see what Rory Best does leadership-wise with the squad. But I don't think this Irish squad needs much leadership. And I don't think that's anything they've struggled with over the past couple of years. Like you say, there's quite a few loud voices on that team and a lot of experience. I think Ireland are going to be the victors that weekend. We're going to move quickly on to the Women's Six Nations Championship, and Scotland will kick things off on Friday, 6 o'clock kickoff, I think it is, in the evening, against England Women, who are the current World Cup champions. Saturday, it's Ireland versus Wales in Dublin, and later on at 9 o'clock, France will host Italy, the women's side. And I think for the women's game, like I say, England are the current World Cup champions. Ireland won the Six Nations last year in the women's game. It's all to play for, isn't it, Rob?
Yeah, and they've just announced the sort of the first world rankings for the women's game, and France have been put just above England, and it is really an Ireland then coming in and fourth with the All Blacks on top. But there's very little in these rankings between France, England and Ireland, and I think that could be played out in the tournament as well, especially with Ireland Six Nations champions, England world champions. Both that puts a target on their backs. France have obviously got to this point. They're going to want to prove that they deserve to be there. And I think England will beat Scotland this weekend. I think Scotland are just a little bit further behind at this point, but I think this is going to be a very competitive tournament and very entertaining.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with England winning on Friday as well. I think Wales might win against Ireland, even though they are the travelling side. I think they've just looked so much more composed, especially on the road at the minute. And I think France will beat Italy in their in that fixture on Saturday night.
I think I'm going to actually marry up and pick exactly the same lineup as I had for the men. I think Ireland will, again, they're at home. I think they're the current champions. They'll be looking to put on a big performance. And I think France are just a lot stronger than Italy in the women's game right now. So I'm going to pick England, Ireland, France, same as the men.
Wow. So there we go. And like we say, it's nice to see the women's game getting the attention that it definitely deserves. And after a brilliant World Cup and the Six Nations last year, it's just growing in strength. And, seen the sevens women's at the world the Olympics later this year. There's so much light being shed on this on that side of the sport, and it's just great to see. And it'll be great to see what the women can produce this weekend. It's going to be heavily competitive as always, as is the men's game. And I think, I don't know about you, Rob, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely a feast of rugby on this weekend, both from the women and the men, and definitely the right time of year to be a rugby fan.
Definitely. And then the week after, and who wants Valentine's Day when the rugby's on? But we'll preview that next week on the show. Thank you very much for joining us this week. If you want to follow us on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/LWSFlanker. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Rob at
LWS Rob.
You can follow the rugby account for all the latest news and interviews at LWS Rugby. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Molly Ray Maria. And if you want to follow the Absolute Flanker show, it's at LWS Flanker. Like I said, thank you very much for joining us. Have a great weekend enjoying the rugby, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
See you next week, guys.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.